All right. Good morning. Welcome to what Lori insists is only our fifth frameworks session of the year. I swear we've done this more than five times, but she tells me I've missed one or two, so whatever. Anyway, good morning. Glad to have everybody here today. This is going to be a really extraordinary and interesting program, and some great people participating in it, and a terrific piece of work to talk with you about from our friends at Battelle. I want to thank our sponsors, Miles Printing, who do these events for us and allow us to keep them educational, informative, and preserve the content of the discussion here today, which is spectacular. I want to thank our friends at Lilly Endowment, who also really make this possible through their sponsorship of BioCrossroads and the foundation-related work that we do. And I want to then set the stage for this morning's conversation and then get out of the way and let it start. BioCrossroads, as most of you know, is an organization that's involved in a lot of different aspects of the life sciences and healthcare industry here. A big part of that is investments and really working on the entrepreneurial environment and the venture capital environment through our BC Initiative side. A large part of it is collaboration and working across industry and academic lines, resulting from time to time in enormous projects like the Biosciences Research Institute, which we're actually not here to talk about today, but we will have you will hear something about it in connection with what we are talking about. And then the other thing that we really try to do with regard to the sector here, because it is one of the most important sectors, if not the leading sector in the region and in the state, is to be sure that we are ahead of the curve in understanding where it's going. When you have a global sector, and Indiana has several under development, the good news is you have a global set of opportunities, and the challenging news is you have a global set of challenges, which can, if you're not careful, you can end up falling behind where you want to be. And in the life sciences area, and this has been true from the very beginning about BioCrossroads, this is a highly demanding sector. We have it historically. It's a highly demanding sector to maintain and to extend because it is very expensive to do. Very expensive to innovate, and it is very human capital intensive to be sure you continue to have a strong chain of talent to make all the things happen that need to happen at every aspect of the process. It is why other regions of the country who want to think about starting a sector like this can't, because the barriers to entry of getting into it are so high. You have to have legacy assets, and then you have to do everything you can all the time to be thinking about how you're going to preserve them and how you're going to create more of them from the base that you have. So last year, and we have worked very closely, you're going to hear in just a moment from our colleague Mitch Horowitz at Battelle. Mitch heads Battelle's technology partnership practice. These are leading national and international experts. We're very fortunate that we've worked with Battelle and with Mitch and his team and with Mitch's predecessor, Walt Placilla, and you were part of that team as well, Mitch. For the past 15, going on close to 20 years, in looking at sectors of opportunity in this region, and specifically focusing often on the life sciences sector. And we are very fortunate to have them working with us, and they have done a series of studies and reports on the sector from the very beginning of BioCrossroads. It was really founded on a consultant study and then continued to develop. We've continued to look at the trends and the issues and the opportunities there. About a year and a half ago, BioCrossroads, in a project led by my colleague Nora Doherty, engaged Battelle to come in and look at how we were doing on the investment capital and the venture capital side. And that led to a very extensive and very good report that was published last year in the fall. If you haven't had a chance to look at it, you should go to our website and see it. It talks a great deal about the challenges in getting sufficient capital, investment capital in this sector, but also the progress that we've made over almost a 20-year period of trying to do more and build more. At the conclusion of that report, and it's an extremely good and thoroughly vetted document and with a lot of good data in it, there's some great observations saying, you know, you are only looking at part of the story. If you're just talking about the investment capital side of this, you then really need to figure out, even if you have the money, do you have the people? Do you have the teams? Do you have the entrepreneurial teams? Do you have the spin-out opportunities and the groups of people who can take them and do something with them in the environment that you have? Do you have a critical mass, not only of money, but of the human capital required to make this sector work? we decided that that was a really good question to look at, and frankly, it's one that we'd never looked at before. And we asked Patel to come back and help us look at that, really focus a little more, a little less on the state of Indiana and a whole lot more on the region. And because, as my CICP colleagues know well, many of the skills that we're talking about here in these technology-intensive industries are not just specific to one sector, we asked Patel in doing this to broaden their focus in a way that Mitchell described to you in a moment, and look not only at life sciences, but life sciences and healthcare in the context of the broader advanced industries concept that we've talked about in these sessions before, that Brookings has brought to the debate, and that is a useful way for looking at STEM-intensive, research-intensive, knowledge-intensive industries, of which we have an abundance here in Indiana. Fortunately, we do. So Battelle has conducted this study. This is the first time we have talked about it publicly. It is not quite online yet, but it is close. It'll be released probably within the next week, and we will certainly flag that when it happens. But you're in for a treat today, because you're going to get a preview of some very, very interesting data that lead to some very interesting conclusions. And we're fortunate, we'll talk about this in a moment too, to have our constant friend and colleague Gary Dick here then to draw this conversation out a little bit, to bring Mitch into it, and to bring all of you into it. So Mitch, take it away.
Thank you very much.
So in many ways, David's really too kind, because it really is a collaboration with BioCrossroads. It's just a fantastic staff working with Nora, Dave, and the whole team is just fantastic. And I really want to thank them, because, you know, they invited me out here, and it's my birthday, and you all came for my birthday party. And I have to tell you, being 45 is just, you don't think I'm 45, neither do my kids. All right, so what we're going to talk about today, I think, is a very, very powerful and important dynamic. And it's not just about the Indy Metro. It's really about what's happening across the country. And I think Brookings did us a great service, because many of us who are really toiling around the country, working, whether it's in research parks, whether it's in academic medical centers, meds and eds districts, all these kinds of developments, we've all been noticing it's a different world. Something is changing in the calculus, in the dynamics of how growth happens. And, you know, some of it is about real estate, but I think what you're going to find as we go through this today, we're going to be talking about how real estate is meeting innovation and economic development, and we're having something, a dynamic happen, that really is in many ways more powerful than anything I've worked on in technology development over a whole lot of years. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to try to give a context about why this is happening a little bit, and also why talent is such an important part of this equation. Then I'm going to tell you a little bit about how we approached the study. And this is one that, you know, we started with innovation because we know it's important. We went to talent, but we realized quickly we're really having some very powerful implications for placemaking in the Indy Metro. And that is what you're going to see out of the findings. And I'm very interested in hearing from you, because this is a very nice crowd. So some people who I see look just like me, and so I relate to you very nicely. And then I see folks who are much younger, and so this is going to be tremendous to kind of have this dialogue about what are the implications and what do we do. So with that, let me... And I hit a button? Great. So with that, let me... You know, I'm an economist by training, which means I really care about facts and data and models and thinking about things, and I also care about proof. So we actually do know, there's a good body of knowledge, that innovation drives growth. And when you think about it, it's not just the past, it's what's happening in the future. So Congressional Budget Office basically says half our growth is going to happen because of productivity, and if we can increase that productivity growth, if we can actually do better in innovation, we'll have even faster growth. And that's the only way we're going to really grow our economy. What people don't always connect to innovation is that it's talent that drives it. And so there's a nice body of literature that shows that when you bring together, particularly in urban areas, a higher concentration of college-educated workforce, it really does drive knowledge spillovers and growth. And it's not simply because you have a lot more smarter people. It's because when you have smarter people together in close proximity, something magical happens around that productivity and those kinds of ideas. And so when we tend to think about it, we tend to think about this not just as high-end talent. And I think that's been, if there's anything in the field that's been of concern to me, is somehow we've created this big divide between high-skilled, middle-skilled, and low-skilled as if they exist in different worlds, when in fact they all integrated together. And what we need to be thinking about is that, yes, we do need our star faculty, and we need our entrepreneurs, and we need people who are going to reduce that great discoveries into new companies and into products, and then we need to have people who are going to be working on production and quality control. And ultimately, if we want to really win in the economic marketplace, we have to create quality products. That means we need a really good technical workforce. So that connects all of these strains of high, middle, and low skill. And you know what? When you have, in any company, take an IT company. I actually worked in a fast-growth clinical trials informatics company for about a little over half a decade. People think that it's all about, the high-end skill development. Well, we had a lot of jobs that were much more high school plus. Nothing is just high school anymore, right? It's hard. But a little high school plus workers with us, they made a pretty decent salary because we were a very high-value-added business. And because we were a high-value-added business, we could pay more. So it's not just about high-skilled jobs and middle-skilled jobs. It's about the whole continuum of jobs and also creating a career pathway. And so I think that's very, very important. But when you think about it as an ecosystem, what we began to realize, and this is something that, we had always talked about in economic development, you need to have a real focus on how you're adding value. You need to be thinking in a very concrete way. How do you ensure, as David was saying before, in the life sciences, but it's true across the board in all technologies, how do you make sure there's no big gaps in your system of going from your technology strengths back into the marketplace and ultimately into very successful companies, whether they're existing companies that are continually reinventing themselves, whether they're, kind of SME, small, mid-tier companies, or whether they're really fast-growth, emerging companies. But layered on top of that is a real dynamic around how talent happens. And that's because talent is mobile. And there's a lot of dynamics. And most of the talent for this region, like most regions, is going to be from, people who have grown up here, who live here, and are going to continue to reside here and move forward. But there's always a part of talent that's around dynamics, around people who are leaving, people who are getting older, and whether they stay, but they're leaving the workforce. And so you always have to think about where you are in this. And then ultimately, that talent is what allows this value chain to take place. And you need it all the way across the board if you're going to have a really successful economy. So we stepped back and we said, we're going to look at the Indy Metro. And just to kind of give terms of reference, because I know it continues to evolve. In fact, I think two new counties got added in the last census run in terms of what are metropolitan areas. We have about 11 counties here with Marion as the urban core. And I point that out because urban core sometimes can be very, very special. And I think in this metro, it actually is a very special place for reasons I'll talk about in a moment. We also picked up a number of benchmarks so that we can actually not just compare you to the country, which sometimes is hard to see where you really stand. There has been a recent effort by the Chamber. So they had a number of benchmarks. I think they had already picked up Denver and Nashville and Columbus. And we felt like we wanted to have some other comparables that kind of looked a lot for us, at least from what we could see in terms of the population and the education and the amount of advanced industries, which I'll talk about a little bit more in a second, and having academic anchors looked a little bit more like what we think of Indy, and also faces some of the challenges, because the past successes, things that David was talking about in terms of the great companies you have in Indiana and in the Indy region, there are other places like you that have had that as well, and how are they doing? And so that's why we added Baltimore and Pittsburgh. So we also recognize there's some big buckets of activity, and we didn't want to get caught in individual occupations or in individual industries. So we put them into a framework that's a little bit broader. On the occupational side, we wanted to look at the high-skilled, which are jobs that not only are classified as requiring bachelor's or above, but we actually looked at the actual data on who works in them. And in fact, it is bachelor's and above. I mean, you always get guys like, you know, Gates and Jobs who, you know, work in IT and obviously don't just work in it, they kind of lead it, who never finished their bachelor's degree, but, you know, that's not a good recipe for success. So if anybody's thinking about that, please get your bachelor's degree. We have middle-skilled jobs, and this is the hardest to define. And so we went back and looked at it really hard. So we want to have something that is more than high school, and that could be some kind of certification. It could be some kind of real training. But we also want to make sure that, in fact, the people working in it really looked like that. And so we went back through, again, the different census data that we could find, and so that's a very nurtured list, because the low-skilled, we didn't want it to be zero, right? Because a lot of people say we need training for everything. In fact, there's lots of jobs out there that are truly high school with very short-term on-the-job training, not a whole lot of intensive stuff. So we put big buckets on talent. On the industry categories, David alluded to, Brookings did some great work around advanced industries. So these are industries that have a lot of R&D activity, have a lot of STEM, you know, science, technology, engineering, math skills in them. And they are very export-oriented, and so they picked a number of industries, and they showed how they really are driving our economy. Well, that doesn't count everything. There's also a lot of good-skilled, high-skilled jobs that are more kind of locally based in health services, in business consulting, and other kinds of business, actually finance. They left out in the advanced industries. So we wanted to pick up them as well, and we recognize it's the confluence of advanced industries with your advanced business and health services that really gives you a very positive dynamic, and it really makes up where most of the high-skilled workers are, for sure. And then we have a lot of sheltered industries, and we were discussing it yesterday. You know, in Indianapolis, you have a real rise of convention business and the sports entertainment that you've very successfully put forward. That generates a lot of jobs as well, and so there's a lot of sheltered industries that are locally based that tend to be more low-skilled in nature. So we have two big categories, and now we're going to get into the findings. So just in case we need to go back, please feel free to ask me any questions about them. So the first question is how are we doing in the Indy region? And one thing that we found out is, well, you're doing pretty well. Look, you grew since the recovery by well over 8%, and the country only grew by 5%. And the real dynamic that's happening here is that your advanced industries is leading the country for the whole metro area, and this sheltered amenity industries is growing really fast as well. So that has some pretty interesting implications when you think about it from a skills and a talent perspective. And this is about the jobs here. This is not about just the talent. This is about where industry has needed skills and found the workers to fill the jobs. And what you can see here is that you are growing at double the rate of the U.S. in high-skilled jobs. That's a great story, right? Well, you're also growing in low-skilled jobs, which, again, it's a job. So it's not a bad thing. And the middle-skilled, you're kind of a little bit, you know, better, but kind of holding your own. So a lot of discussion is about, and I know this is a little contrary to conventional wisdom, because we talked to a lot of people as we were doing our work. People in not only the Indy Metro, but throughout Indiana are really captivated by middle-skilled jobs. Why? Well, the answer is because there's a lot of older workers here and a lot of job openings. But in terms of growth of jobs, it's actually, and we found this across the U.S. because we do a lot of work in the talent area now, is not the fastest growing in terms of new jobs that are coming. So this is not job openings. This is about where new jobs are happening in the Indy metro region. So a good story, and then also a little concerning, but again, if those low-skilled jobs are with high-value businesses, they could be very high-paying, or at least a lot better paying than if they were just in sheltered industries. So then we dug a little deeper, and we said, so what's happening on the population front? And then we were surprised, because we just went through to show you that your advanced industries are doing really well. Your high skilled jobs are doing really well in terms of growth since the recovery. So we expect to see this explosion of highly educated people in the region. And what we actually found is that's not quite the case for the overall metro. Again, it's a good growth. The 7% exceeds the overall population growth, which was just about 4%, a little over 4%, 4.1. But even compared to the state overall, it isn't keeping pace. It's not keeping pace with the country. When we compared it to these overall metros, again, it's not keeping pace. So we said to ourselves, wow, so what really, you know, what's going on? Let's take a harder look at where I think people think the toughest competition is for talent, which is in young workers. And we'll talk about educated in a second. It's very hard to slice and dice this stuff too much because the census data just isn't that good when you get down to it. So we just stuck for initially what's happening with young workers and what an interesting dynamic that's happening for the metro area. You're doing really well in growing 20 to 24-year-olds, but you are not doing so well when you get to the 25 to 34-year-olds. So now that makes me a little concerned, because what that's saying to me is, wait, just when people, young people are getting into their prime of their work life, they're probably leaving the Indy Metro. And so we wanted to investigate it even more. So we looked at the net migration, and I know that this has been a topic of discussion for a long time, and we did a lot of work around what were some of the really intensive dynamics for recent college graduates in Indiana. And I do think it comes down to their understanding of whether there are good career prospects in Indiana overall in that study. And boy, it convinced us that, and I think it convinced the Lilly Endowment, that building stronger connections between college students and the employers in Indiana is a really important thing, and particularly because this state and great institutions of higher education, people don't realize that it has the second highest in absolute numbers of students from out of state coming to study in state. So you have a fantastic opportunity to attract a lot of great talent, right? But you got to keep it. And the only way to keep it is you got to give them an understanding. And I'll tell you, you know, I just had a son who just graduated from University of Virginia in statistics, and he has no idea what to do with a statistics degree. So he's going into physical therapy. I mean, just go figure. It drives me crazy. Medical school would have sounded better to me. I'm just kidding. But it just, he never even thought about what to do with statistics, which drives me crazy because that's all I think about is data analytics these days. I can't do it, but I have staff who does it really well. But what you can see here is that there are a number of regions that are just taking off. But when you look at the Indy Metro, not only are you losing population, but you're losing highly educated population, and you're doing it at a level that is amongst the of our benchmarks kind of at the lower end. Pittsburgh is kind of interesting, and you're going to see some dynamics with Pittsburgh that they're actually holding their own. So then we said, well, what is growing here? And just to kind of get to the chase, we realized, wait a second, foreign workers, including foreign highly educated workers, are really important in this economy. Because, again, you're filling all these nice high-skilled jobs, 12% growth since the recovery. Where are those workers coming from? Well, one answer is they're coming from the foreign-born. And this line here is a very important line because what it's showing, these numbers are the absolute numbers. So you can see, because, again, these are metro areas that are reasonably same size, about 2 million in metro area population. But this line is the share that foreign-born, highly educated workers make up of your total change, again, 7% growth of in Indy, of your highly educated workers. And you can see this is one place where Indy Metro well outpaces everyone else. So there's something happening here that's good, or at least you're offsetting what is not good by having these foreign workers. And again, the level here is pretty decent. You know, you're up there with Denver. I mean, again, Baltimore has the same situation. And again, it may be that a lot of this is the kinds of magnets you have, the anchors, the institutional anchors that are attracting this workforce here. So we can go into that a little bit more, and I'd love to hear your perspectives, because again, the data just goes so far. and that's something that's very important. We also were very concerned about making sure we understood, because we have been studying the life sciences, as David indicated, but we haven't seen the overall technology sectors. And we know advanced industries in the Indy Metro is much more than life sciences. I mean, life sciences is a big backbone of it, very, very important. But you have Rolls-Royce, you have, I mean, just in terms of names, you have a lot of IT. In fact, we looked at the dynamics that are happening here, and while the overall story has been good for the overall metro, you know, what's really been important is the shift that's happening towards IT industry in this region and towards broader science engineering services. And many of that may be to service life science companies as well as some of the more traditional advanced manufacturing that you have here. So we wanted to look a little bit more closely at it. One good story is a very important indicator is your ability to create intellectual property. That's a very important indicator of your broader footprint around innovation. And Indy is kind of right in the middle, both in terms of this is the change in awards since the recovery, since 2009, and this is the absolute number. And you can see you're right in the mix with these other industries. Denver is, you know, way up there. They have a longstanding communications, now they've added IT, and that doesn't even count in Boulder. So there's definitely something special happening in Denver. But then we looked at venture capital, and we looked at deals and dollars. And this is an area of concern of ours, is that you have a lot of innovation activity happening here, but are you really translating it in that cutting edge new company formation? And while I know there's a lot of great things that have happened here and a lot of new companies that got started here that have been very successful. Some of them have been acquired, but still they have been deeply rooted and moving forward. But the number of deals here and the volume both are very, very low. And so we'd love to see that do better. And we looked a little bit more at kind of your R&D base and what was happening here, and we realized, you know, there's something missing that actually is part of this dynamic now that I was mentioning at the beginning, which is it's not just about innovation and talent anymore. It's about the placemaking that you have. And actually, the implications for the Indy Metro are really powerful. One is we know while you're kind of getting by and you can be complacent about it as an Indy, as a metropolitan area, that, hey, we're growing jobs, we're growing industries. But when you look underneath it, we're not growing and attracting and retaining the talent at a level that I think is sufficiently allow you to keep pace with other areas. So that's a concern. The second is this innovation, this ability to take this fantastic community of industries and ideas that are moving, and how do we add a dynamic to it that's really kind of about the future? And that actually is what led Brookings to write about innovation districts. And it's a very important topic. I mean, they're seeing things from urban geographies now where it's more than just live, work, play. And I think that I want to skip ahead a second to talk about it. Again, live, work, play, what we see here happening, and I've, you know, had a chance, you know, to drive around a lot, and, you know, I mean, housing pops up in places I never would have expected it. It really does look like the community, you know, I was out last night and walking around, it was a beautiful night. I mean, it's so alive downtown. It's tremendous to see it. That phenomenon is not just about, that's not about innovation. That phenomenon is about real estate. You know, I live in suburban Maryland. We have so many cool places in the suburbs now. And I know you do too, right? I mean, Carmel and other places where basically streetscape, you can be outside and you feel like you're in an urban area. And that's about the real estate dynamic of what drives real estate growth in the future. What innovation districts add is this economic driver. And we need to think hard about whether, in fact, we have that kind of innovation driver. And what we began to realize is you have all the potential for it because your urban core actually is where all of these assets around innovation, all these anchors reside. I mean, you have IU Health, you have your whole academic research complex, and the hospital, so that meds and eds activity. You have Lilly's main R&D right downtown, and Rolls-Royce doing a lot of advanced engineering downtown. Cummins is coming. You have all this IT activity. I guess the two signature things is both Salesforce and Angie's List. We know that two-thirds of your base of your advanced industries is actually in this urban core of Marion County. But let me tell you, when we looked at how you're performing, and I'm going to go to the data for a second, boy, it's discouraging about what's happening in Marion County from an economic development, not a living phenomenon, but an economic development. And this is a whole urban core. So the first thing to look at is the job growth. So in advanced industries, you were flat since the recovery. So the region's been growing, right, faster than the country in advanced industries, but it ain't because of Marion County, where almost two-thirds of your advanced industry jobs are happening. There's a very important shift happening in advanced industries, but it's not because of innovation. It's because of business conditions, and that's what's driving. And there's probably some key industries like logistics and distribution, other things that are growing. But look at how these other regions, if you leave Baltimore aside, all these other urban cores are really taking off in advanced industry. Then we ask the question, well, what's happening on the population? Look, Marion County, this is only data for Marion County now for the Indy Metro. It is the leader in this 20 to 24-year-old boom. And it is also the leader in the fact that we're not seeing strong growth in the 25 to 34-year-olds. On the highly educated, it only grew 3%. Look how much more these urban cores grew. Foreign-born, again, not bad, but most of the foreign, highly educated foreign-born live in the suburbs. And then here's the big thing, is that in terms of the net migration out of highly educated workers, Marion County is the reason. The suburbs are actually holding their own. And your losses are as big as any place. I mean, Columbus is true, you know, Battelle's headquartered in Columbus. Do not quote me, Gary. Do not quote me. You cannot quote me on this. I mean, Columbus still suffers from being a very big college town. And it loses a lot of, you know, in their urban core, they lose a lot. You're losing just as much. So our concern about what's happening here about placemaking is very, very strong for the Indy region. And yet, the more we look at it, and, you know, 16 Tech may be one of your best shots today. For us, when we looked at it, and again, this is just a high-level observation, it just seems to be really well-placed because it actually, you know, when you think about networks, you know, what people don't talk to you about networks is sometimes you actually need this a key hub in the network that really makes the network really highly functional. And it looks to us like just where 16 Tech is between kind of the whole Eds and Meds district between IUPUI and IU Health, IU Medical School and IU Health, and Ashkenazi and the other hospitals, the VA. It's really well placed. Plus, it's not that far from all of the other major R&D and IT assets that are taking place here. We even mapped a lot of the smaller IT and science engineering, and they're all very close. I think we ended up with well over 100 companies kind of within a 2 or 3 mile radius of 16 Tech. But this is a really tough, I drove it. Boy, it was hard to get around. You know, you hit things. So, you know, or you hit water, I guess. I couldn't quite tell as I was going down through these different roads. But so this is an example of where placemaking can make a big difference. But we spent a lot of time, you know, our own work, and because we're not here, it's a lot easier sometimes to see things than when you are in a place. And I say that, you know, even having been on the ground, because I've been a practitioner, and sometimes it's a lot harder to figure out and diagnose yourself than it is to look at a place and then realize, oh, from the outside, this is something that's happening. It's interesting. The fact that there isn't placemaking in this innovation stuff is just shocking to us in our group, because it just has naturally evolved in other places. And I think Denver is going to be a great example of where it's kind of naturally evolved. But you really need to be intentional about this stuff. And when we were talking to a lot of the leadership stakeholders here, plus our prior work over the years, we realized that in addition to this placemaking, you know, you really need to have things like really a full complement of commercialization, entrepreneurial development, that's not just about, like, you know, mentoring in a general sense, but is truly active focus around serial entrepreneurs working with younger, emerging talent to drive business growth. You need to be able, you know, here's a community that, you know, in the life sciences, it's just stunning to me, has not had a commercial real estate market in wet lab space. I live in suburban Maryland, you know, suburban D.C. We have well over 1 million square feet of wet lab space on the commercial marketplace, right? You do not have that. You have very institutional, big company-owned and academic-owned real estate. And so it's very hard for a startup company to find wet lab space. Boy, that's a competitive disadvantage of significance. And then we need to be thinking through, how do we ensure these connections? Because, you know, I drove all around the urban core, and I know that while there's some, you know, nice new housing happening, there's a lot of older communities that looked, you know, like, you know, that you know, the neighborhoods didn't look quite, you know, business didn't look quite great. And so if we're going to do this and we're going to make this placemaking, we got to connect all the dots if we're going to really be successful, because communities, you know, are waking up to the fact that they need to see all these things. And there's some great examples where that has been happening. And people were talking about that. And also, you know, learning about what's been happening on your education front has been tremendous. And in fact, I can't believe you guys have your kids going to school already. I mean, it's just, I mean, my kids would have just freaked out to think that on my birthday they'd be in school, you know. It's just because, you know, we party so much on my birthday. But so I think it's very, very important that we really think hard about how we go forward with this. And I think with that, I may pause, because I think, right, we're gonna go back to questions and Jerry, but but I've left you all speechless, right? So think through your questions. Jerry's in charge, and I will go take a seat.
Well, yeah, and I want to bring Gary Dick into this conversation. Gary is, along with Mitch, our constant friend and professional colleague. Runs, everybody here knows Gary Dick well, runs Grow Indiana Media Ventures, and has really put together an innovative business in his own right that has really grown with all of us over the past 10 to 15 years. There's no one better than Gary, in our experience, to really draw out and get into a complex but really compelling conversation. You've all gotten a lot of information and data. Patel has done great work in putting this together. As you can tell, we have worked with these folks long enough that they're prepared to give us the good news and the challenging news, and I think this report has a great combination of each. Gary's going to help unpack that a little bit in a dialogue with Mitch, and then Gary, I know you're going to then bring other people here into that discussion too.
Absolutely.
So I don't know if you guys like the arrangement of those chairs or not. Feel free
sure.
to do whatever kind of works.
It's a great view.
You're going to have a seat. David, thank you very much, and thanks for all you do and all BioCrossroads and CICP and do for the Indianapolis region. It is substantial, and Mitch, you had some great stuff, very interesting, kind of overload as I was thinking through some of the statistics. One thing that really stuck out to me on a challenging standpoint was this loss of talent from Marion County, and in particular, I think you said from the urban core, right?
Yeah.
Now, as you look at that, if you could expand on that a little more, and then also talk about, you know, do you see that improving? You know, you mentioned Cummins, you know, regional headquarters downtown. Rolls-Royce, I know, is going to announce a huge investment here in a matter of weeks. We saw Emarsys, which is a digital marketing company, and we've created this digital marketing hub here. So we've seen a number of announcements, you know, that will be in the urban core. Do you see it improving?
Yeah, so you know, this is a really interesting region, because you could easily be complacent. You could easily say things are working out, things are getting better. I think the data actually suggests that from a metro area, things are getting better. And I can tell you, even within the urban core, we can see over not a very long period of time since, you know, from just before the recession to 2013, we could see a real shift in what's happening here in your advanced industry. So it is shifting towards more IT and more scientific and engineering services, which for us is like the potentially the seed corn for the next economy and wave. So you could say, wow, we're really doing fine. But, you know, when you compare yourselves to other regions and you really start to think about this, and you think about it from the point of view of your potential, I think there's another gear here that you just have to strive for, because it's just, I mean, with all the good things happening, it's still not good enough. And I do think that, you know, at some point, you know, this stuff will sort out and investments are going to happen. You know, I mean, even amongst the real estate, national real estate community who helps move some of this innovation districts, they have choices to make. And they're being pulled into lots of communities. So almost every community I go to, I can tell a good story about because the things are better. But I think here it's a question of what's really the potential and are we getting to our potential?
Talent, obviously, is a huge issue here and the fuel for all this growth that we want to see. Another statistic that's struck me, we're all trying to attract and retain more of the young talent, the young professional. We're doing a great job, 20 to 24, but that 25 to 34,
right,
which is a key demographic there, we're not doing it.
No. And keep in mind, I didn't make this point. That data is people who are migrating out of state, mm-hmm. right? So it's not that the 25, 34-year-olds decide, oh, we're going to move to the suburbs now, and you know, that's not what that data is showing. I mean, that may be true, but that's not what that data is showing. So I do think it's a really challenging talent, and I can give kind of a personal story. My daughter went to turns out that Baltimore has a great art school called the Maryland Institute College of Art. My daughter went there. She's 23 now, so she's out of college 2 years or so. She's been working in Baltimore. She's actually making it. But, you know, her and her entire cohort are about to move to Los Angeles. Okay? Because she's into the visual arts and into performance. And, you know, she just doesn't... I mean, she thinks, you know, Baltimore's a great city to do it in because it's low cost, so it's cheap to live, but the opportunities aren't there. And that's how I think about young talent, is that, you know, there's some things that can keep people... And there's a draw, but boy, at the end of the day, if you don't have those bigger, bolder opportunities that reach your potential, you're not going to keep them. I mean, it's very, very difficult, and everybody's competing for them.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so difficult. And so how do you have this, how do you get past just complacency, I think, is really challenging. For the urban core, you know, if I was running for mayor, which I'm not, but if I was running for, I'd be very concerned about what's happening to the economy, because you can't have a strong tax base, you can't provide good services if you're not at the growing end of your overall economics of the region, and that's a real challenge for regions is when suburbs grow and cities don't. Boy, that's a tough one.
You talked about Indianapolis, the Indianapolis region having a lot of positives in terms of advanced industries. Development challenges, though, as well. Right. You look at the number of residents with at least a bachelor's degree. You know, some of those barriers that are very daunting. Talk about those, and why they exist. Why Indianapolis is lagging in some of those categories versus some of its peer.
Sure. So I mean, you know, some of this gets into industry mix, which we did not study here, right? Because I also think that you've had some very important economic drivers. That and you have a legacy of advanced manufacturing that has always offered really good jobs, but now requires a higher technical skill. And you have the logistics distribution industry that's really taken off. So I do think that that historically the region hasn't had as high a level, and I do think you're increasing. But the pace of increasing is really the question here. And for us, because we are more of a technology-based economic development organization, so we think about things from there, it's really like there's so many good things happening, but yet I can tell that there is more that could be done. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the formation of IBRI is really a part of doing more and reaching that potential, because if you know, sometimes it just happens. you know, I can't, and I know Massachusetts very well. I don't think anybody in Boston or Cambridge understood the dynamic they were building. But I could tell you the communities that I've, you know, practiced in, which is Maryland, plus communities that we've helped around the country, like Pittsburgh and others, they have been very intentional about making these connections. And I think BioCrossroads is from the capital study we did, clearly can show a lot of gains over the years, but more could be here. And that's so hard to help people understand that it could be even better.
Mm-hmm. Are there things, because you mentioned that these things don't happen overnight in terms of, you know, degree completion and then those stats
right.
that are challenging for Indianapolis, are there things that other communities are doing to kind of maybe speed that process to
sure.
make things better, more attractive?
Yeah, well, I mean, again, I think this placemaking is really a missing ingredient here. Mm-hmm. It really just stands out in this analysis. We didn't start this analysis to get to placemaking, right? We were doing this to try to understand the dynamics happening around innovation and talent, and it, as we unfolded the analysis, we began to realize, wow, there's something happening here or not happening here that mm-hmm. should be happening here. Mm-hmm. And it was very clear that the findings raised the stakes on why it's so important, because of both the fact of not growing the talent at the pace that you need to, as well as the innovation economy around emerging new companies not really taking hold in the way that we would like to see it take hold,
yeah.
broadly speaking, that is what an innovation district should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
That is what a placemaking strategy should be about, because what we're learning is that the placemaking is what makes both innovation and talent come together.
Mm-hmm.
It's the signature focus, and you could be very, very intentional about it and accomplish it. So it doesn't just have to, it doesn't have to be LA,
mm-hmm.
right? Because LA doesn't do much to get what it got, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've worked in LA recently, you know? I mean, that dynamic, some places have it, a lot of Midwestern communities, a lot of Northeastern communities, a lot of Southern communities have to build it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Indianapolis is a place that has to build it.
So you're saying an innovation district can clearly affect talent recruitment.
Oh, it absolutely. I mean, that is because. But it's not just about cool living spaces. It's about having great jobs, right? So you got to have that innovation drive. You got to have that economic development element to go along with it. And that's what distinguishes just having a cool city versus having a cool city that's actually able to keep the talent
mm-hmm.
base.
Mm-hmm.
That you know, in many ways, both the Indy Metro and Indiana itself, because of the higher education community here, is very well positioned to have and win in the talent
mm-hmm.
wars that are happening. But we can't just, it's not just about having downtown loft living and nice
mm-hmm.
apartments. It's about having great jobs downtown as well.
What does it take to develop an innovation district? Here in Indianapolis, especially when you look at places like say Pittsburgh or Denver or some of those communities,
sure.
like what does it take? What did they do to be successful?
Sure. So take a place like Pittsburgh. They've been at it for a very long time, you know. And my predecessor put in place the Ben Franklin Technology Partnership 30 years ago, maybe a little more. But innovation works is a big part of that economy, and they've gotten it, and they've continued to raise the bar, and they have
whoops.
Great accelerators. This is very durable.
Yeah.
I, this is a great product, I'm sure.
The guy on the board just lost his hearing.
excellent. Right, it's sort of like the iPads, you know,
yeah.
we'll film it until it breaks.
Right.
So Pittsburgh has been at it, but their innovation activities have actually continued to raise the bar. So in Innovation Works, they now have accelerators. They did the Keystone Innovation Zones,
mm-hmm.
where around their universities, they not only gave excellent incentives, but they also worked very hard at bringing the community together. They gave planning grants to really get people working together. Plus, the Pittsburgh Life Science Greenhouse always had an emphasis, and I'll take credit for that. Because we developed the plan, we said there's not enough entrepreneurs in Pittsburgh. We could bring all the capital we want. We could have all the commercialization activities happening, with the university in terms of proof of concepts and moving technologies through the university pipeline. But it ain't going to work if we don't bring the entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
And so they actually have had their signature program has been, we've called it a CEO Corps. But basically, you know, we need to have more business formation. It's a lot easier to do it in IT. And, you know, Pittsburgh has done it in IT, but you're doing it in IT as well. But you need it across the board, and we need to see really high growth companies. And then others will be attracted, right? So you know, Pittsburgh is a great story on that. Another one that's actually an interesting story that, that is worth telling is one of the most successful urban research parks is in Philadelphia. It's University Science Center. For them to take the next step, you know what they're doing right now? They are doubling their size, and they're bringing in housing, mixed use, retail, and they're creating a dynamic live-work play space. They already have a very intentional development activity. They have a great incubator. You know, Steve Tang, who leads them, is a great serial entrepreneur. They have venture funding. They have all the ingredients of economic development, but they weren't good enough without bringing it all together. And so people are reinventing themselves all around the country. We're going to be working in Huntsville soon. They're the second largest. Research Triangle Park is now doing a whole new master plan. So even successful entities that had the right ingredients from before around the innovation are learning they got to bring the whole package together.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what's happening here is you do have the housing dynamics and, you know, I drove Indiana Avenue yesterday. I could see it popping up even in around what might be considered your central node that's missing today in placemaking, which is would be what people call 16 Tech. But we have to have a very intentional innovation space. You know, developers will come in and they'll give you great space, but they're only going to build as fast as you drive demand. You know, this is another thing you're not supposed to quote me on, which is, you know, developers fill demand. They don't create demand. We need a demand creation driver to complement all the great things that are already here. Because I know in the life sciences, there isn't a better organization around once a company is formed and moving, you know, than by a crossroads to really advance it. And the fund of funds and the seed fund and all these things that are there. But we need more sequence. And that really is, I think, a lot of, you know, we'll talk about IVRI more. But I'm excited about IVRI because I think it's a great demand driver and creator for the region. And building around that is very, very important. And it's just, and it's more than life sciences. I don't think 16 Tech or any placemaking in Indianapolis will be successful if it's only around the life sciences. And it would miss a lot of what is in this economy.
As you look at positive developments that have happened, in the Indianapolis region, the kind of the vibe things going on here. Do you look at an innovation district as kind of a missing link? You know, do you look at what other places are doing?
Sure.
What could the impact potentially here be of an innovation district?
Yeah. So we step back and, you know, Pittsburgh has actually, their urban core has been growing at 10%. So here we're like a little, you know, we're completely flat, right? Just a little bit below zero in the urban core. In the Pittsburgh urban core, it's growing 10%. I don't suggest you're going to hit 10% growth over a few years. But, you know, right now, if your advanced industry base were to grow at the national average, it would grow at about 1.2% a year on a compounded basis. That doesn't sound like much, right? And I would think anybody here in business who thinks my business is only going to grow 1.2% a year, is that a great business? No, that's really modest,
right?
Because of the size and the footprint here, by 2030, that would be an extra 12,000 jobs for the urban core. So that's a great number to think about. I mean, so that to me is it's a little bit above complacency, but it's not like trying to sell, you know, and have, you know, really rose-eyed glasses. So I do think that there is real upside here, even at modest growth of focusing. But ultimately, what we want to do is we want to grow more like Nashville and Denver and Pittsburgh in terms of the urban core. And that, you know, and it's hard to get those dynamics because as we were talking, I can't explain Denver.
Yeah.
You know, I can explain Boulder. I understand Boulder really well. But Denver, you know, they actually moved their health complex to the suburbs. They still have a bit of footprint. But we looked at the venture capital deals that were happening in the Denver area. Boy, all the IT deals, all, I mean, it's all happening downtown. Mm-hmm. There's a dynamic. And so they have a very, they've reached a tipping point. And I don't know if it's because of the shadow of Boulder as well, because when I think of Boulder, I think of, you know, one of the hottest spots in digital media in the country. Plus, mm-hmm. you know, I know from the life sciences, they are a leader in RNA technology, and they've just taken off in the life sciences. So there's, you know, I could explain Boulder a lot better than Denver, but we need to see in Indianapolis that kind of dynamic where, while you always have to sustain your investments, I mean, even San Diego Connect, for instance, is still going 30 years later, mm-hmm. and who would ever think San Diego needed mm-hmm. entrepreneurship? Mm-hmm. We really need to get to a tipping point here, and I don't think we're there yet. I mean, that's my concern for the Indy Metro, is you're not quite there. So please, you know, great things happening here, but please don't be complacent.
Yeah.
You know.
I want to ask you a question, and I want to bring David up, too, to pose this to you as well. You know, kind of on the flip side, we talk about the Innovation District. What if Indianapolis did not continue to pursue an Innovation District? What if this whole idea for an Innovation District went away? You can talk about the potential if it does happen. What if it doesn't happen?
I think it's more of the same. Or, you know, I mean, I think I don't see anything that's going to – I don't see any dynamic that's going to change you enough without focusing around the placemaking. So, again, it for the overall metro, it hasn't been terrible. I can't tell you it's going to stay this way. But for the urban core, it's just not what it needs to be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know that you're going to turn around your talent proposition. Mm-hmm. You know, why would 25 and 34-year-olds want to stay? Mm-hmm. So we need to think about it. This is the next logical step, and it's a step that even entrenched places that have had good innovation activities recognize they got to have the whole mm-hmm. package.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, David, your take on that question. You know a lot about what can happen potentially with an innovation district, but what if for some reason it doesn't happen?
Well, we started thinking about something like the Biosciences Research Institute as a great next positive step forward, sort of the ultimate collaboration mm-hmm. among our existing very strong life sciences companies and academic structure here, and that's all still true. But what this kind of work and this kind of discussion injects into the debate is that it's not only a nice thing to do, it's a pretty essential thing to do. And I'd even start with our existing base here. Mm-hmm. I think that if we cannot be more of a collection point for talent and entrepreneurial activity at scale, which I think is really part of what Mitch is getting at, it's going to be difficult even for our traditional mm-hmm. very robust industries to continue to do what they're doing mm-hmm. On their own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we're at a point where all of these pieces need to come together and stay together and expand together on a much more dynamic basis than in the past. And it's why we've been so interested in thinking about, you know, you start with what you're good at, you start with a core. Thinking about something like the Biosciences Research Institute, where you bring 200 extraordinarily talented people who do not live here today to come here and do amazing things, and these are amazing people we're talking about. What's the leverage impact from that? And again, to Mitch's point, it's got to be about a whole lot more than the life sciences. It's got to be really sort of across all mm-hmm. technologies, which is why the IBRI has turned into itself a placemaking strategy, thinking not so much about a great campus for that institute, but what that institute could be a part of and what it could anchor mm-hmm. here in the community that we haven't seen here before. So we need to be about doing the same thing.
Give us an update, then I'll open it up to a few questions, hopefully from the audience here. But in terms of an update on the IBRI and 16 Tech as well, where do things stand now, and where do you see things?
So from the standpoint, and several of them are here, but from the standpoint of the leadership of the industry partners primarily who are driving the formation of the Biosciences Research Institute, 16 Tech is an potentially ideal location for it because it's large. It is in a really interesting part of the near downtown area, and it's been designated for this kind of development by the city for nearly 20 years. I mean, people forget that, but this has been being talked about for a long time. It's lacked an anchor tenant, and it lacks a couple of other things, and Mitch got to that a moment ago. We have been, for example, as a community, many of the cities that Mitch is talking about as benchmarks have been able to do great things with rivers and waterways to make those as sort of centers of innovation. We do nothing with the White River down here, really, at the moment, and other than the activity around the canal, we've done nothing about that beyond real estate to try to make that a really interesting economic driver. If IBRI were to go there and 16 Tech were to be started with the IBRI as an anchor tenant, which is a really strong possibility, you still have to do some things to connect all of that island, that very attractive island, but still an island, to the rest of the campuses that we're talking about here, to IUPUI and to the rest of the community, by building a bridge and also maybe more than one at some point, and also by making sure that the property itself is easily traversable so that people can get up to 16th Street. That's not an easy thing to do, and it's going to require a pretty significant coming together, intentional strategy, as Mitch would say, but probably really worth the effort because it could spawn some pretty remarkable things. And we've had some people taking a look at the possibilities there, and they're exciting. Yeah.
Good. How about a question or two from the audience? Yes. Dave, if you want to go ahead.
I'm Matt Morris with Franklin College. I went to IU, my wife went to Purdue, and I'm just interested in some of the other cities that you talked about here, how are some of the other schools, Franklin, Small Liberal Arts College, I know President Elson is here from Marion, how do those schools become engaged in these activities? What's their role, and what have you seen in the other cities where you've done some research?
Right. So first, you know, keep doing the good work that you're doing. And I have to say, you know, I've studied much more the research universities because that's kind of where we've been. But, you know, it takes a full community in terms of the higher ed. And what we've learned is that, you know, higher ed has to continue to strive, and it's really hard to make itself relevant for these kids' futures in terms of connecting with employers. It's not an easy thing to do. I do think by having the Lilly Endowment here, you have a means to help you get there, which most schools don't have. But it's staying connected to the community. Without the higher ed, you know, a lot of possibilities for both the Indy Metro and Indiana itself wouldn't be here the way that they are. And so people always talk about the importance of technology transfer, right? I mean, you know, and it captivates people, but I keep telling people the most important technology transfer is this graduate. It's the talent, you know. And ultimately, that has to get connected to both emerging companies. And, you know, again, you have your OR scholars. You know, we have a lot of nice things. The question for us is scale. Do you have enough of it happening? And is it happening without you having to work really hard every day to make it happen? But I think getting closer to employers and understanding skill demands and where the jobs are and working, because, you know, every community is different. And if I came in and I told you, you got to do exactly what they're doing in Tampa or what they're doing in Philadelphia today or what they're doing in Denver, you may miss your employer community. And so it's very important to be mindful of that. You know, you have great institutions in the state, and I know they have statewide impact, and we just got to keep promoting it and also continuing to grow. Each university, each college is part of the collective, and so I don't know your potentials, and so I'd love to learn more, but everybody has a role to play within this, and we just got to keep working at it, and you got to be at the table.
Additional questions? Yeah, Dan.
Thank you. I don't know if there's so much questions or comment. You mentioned within our urban core we have a lot of poverty or low-income jobs, a lot of empty homes. We're on the near northwest side, beautiful river. You know, we can see all the development there. But you mentioned something, and that I've come to believe and drive around the neighbors we have to do. We've grown exponentially. Our math science, pre-med, we have a joint engineering program at Purdue. It's growing rapidly. You don't see a lot of kids. The face of it doesn't look like the general face of my population. You drive in my neighborhood, it's Hispanic, Latino. we have to have more organic kids that will actually want to stay here, I'm confident, capable of going into engineering, mathematics, chemistry. Those majors look very different, the faces in those majors. And I'm right in the neighborhood. And that's going to be a long scale deal because the future is going to look very different in terms of the makeup. And I don't know that we have that pipeline. I don't think we have people fully engaged in making that pipeline better.
Right. So, Mitch, I want to just say one thing to that very point. One of the great opportunities in thinking about these urban innovation districts, and Battelle is extremely familiar with those, as are our friends at Brookings, and in fact, you guys work a lot together in that concept. And there are developers who are pretty familiar with those too. And if you look at some of the urban innovation districts around the country that exist today, the interesting thing about the jobs impact that Mitch is suggesting to you in these comments is it's not just all people in white lab coats with PhDs. The jobs impact of these innovation districts, in fact, they don't work unless you're really drawing the people who live into the community to participate in the life of them. This is not gentrification. This is not going in and knocking out, you know, an existing community and bringing a new one in. This is building something within a community that exists and drawing the community into it to make it more vibrant. And so the skill mix and the kinds of jobs that we're looking at would be really nicely distributed across the low, middle, and high skill mix that Mitch is talking about here. And importantly, these districts typically, I know this is true in Baltimore, I think it's true in the one in St. Louis, they offer on-site opportunities for the local population to get the training they need to access that. And Dan, I know that's something you all are very focused on, being able to do it at Marion.
Yeah. I mean, there's no easy answer on this. I wish I could tell you, boy, somebody has solved it, and here's the equation, and just go, you know, do these things. But I do think there are promising developments in what David was alluding to. You know, one in Baltimore. So on the west side, where, you know, actually where the riots, close to where the riots are, there's actually more quietly, there's been a lot of activity with what they call Biopark. It's the University of Maryland Baltimore development. And they have really been, they've gone so far as they've brought the community college to do skill training. They've been in the schools. But they also have a new startup company that's truly focused around just creating community jobs in the life sciences. So very, very intentional. Memphis is another great example. Memphis BioWorks actually created the first charter school in all of Tennessee. And it's a science and math academy, specifically to start to change the dynamics. What really is the potential, though, is, I really believe that kids, to imagine, they need to see adults doing it. So I think The challenge I'd love you all to take on, and what David is saying is completely true because of both the mixed use development, but also because, you know, people again think that most of the jobs, you know, take IT, you know, if you look at, you know, in Indiana, who works in IT jobs, actually about a third of them are quote unquote low skilled jobs, right? Because there's lots of different things that have to happen in these companies depending upon what they're actually having to do in terms of the services that they provide. So we have to get the parents to be working in these places. You can't just get to the kids, because if the kids don't see their parents, and, you know, again, you know, I grew up in a very tough part of Brooklyn, you know, pretty much all African-American and Haitian. And, you know, I had a different reference group, though. You know, even though I grew up in that neighborhood, I went to schools, I saw myself differently. And being able to see people in the community, and, you know, that's the biggest challenge. It's the isolation. It's not seeing the economic potentials. So I always knew that if I did great in school, I had a way out. And I knew the way out was to be like my cousins, you know, who didn't live in this, in where I lived and stuff. You know, kids I went to Hebrew school with who didn't live where I lived. So that was my way out. We need to give that for everybody. We need to get everybody to dream. And I could tell you, you know, again, living in Montgomery County in Maryland, you know, while we don't do as well as we should be doing, boy, we're doing a lot better than what you're suggesting. And even you know, we have a very strong Latino population, but we're able to, you know, I mean, a lot of them are doing very well, and I know the kids are doing well. And so, you know, but it's a real struggle, and it's very, very difficult. And if anybody tells you it's easy to do, boy, you know, kick them out of town, you know.
Joe, you have a question?
Indianapolis has a focus on sports and convention business, and I'm curious how supportive that is with, and I know your study didn't necessarily look at this, but how supportive is that thrust to what we're talking about here in the life sciences, and especially drilling down into the two different age dynamics,
right,
21 to 24 or whatever it was, and then the slightly older.
Right.
I'm interested in your perspective on that.
I think these things are, I mean, they're all part of development, and you have to have cultural venues, you have to have things to do. You know, I mean, who would want to live in a town that, you know, didn't have the Colts, right? I mean, you know, I don't know, or the Pacers. Maybe the Pacers will get better again. So I think those things are important, and you know, I'm the hotel I'm in. You know, clearly, you know, if there's a lot of amateur, there's some kind of swimming competition happening, and the whole hotel is full of these folks and their kids. A lot of fun. You know, it's an economic driver, and it also offers a placemaking in the sense of cultural activities and venues. You know, I think it's important. I don't think it's enough for an economy, right? So, you know, and so I wouldn't say it's a bad thing to do, but we need to have this innovation. I mean, the potential here is that's all great stuff, but we need more, right? And we're talking about something that, you know, is very hard to earn, which is this kind of innovation-driven economy just for these advanced industries. You have the potential to keep doing a lot better than you're doing. And so I'm not against anything in terms of development and jobs are jobs. And that's all great, but I could tell you on this innovation economy, which is where our expertise is, you could do a lot more.
Well, let's go right here first, and Mike will go
to you. Thank you. Hi, my name's Renee Becker-Blau, and I'm the executive director of Indiana First, which is a nonprofit organization that students build robots. And so they have a lot of these great talents and skills. And so one of the questions I had for you is, I have access to all of these high school students that have these great skills. What can we do from a nonprofit point of view to make sure that we are highlighting some of these innovative companies in the area and these opportunities to try and encourage the students to think that, you know, they don't have to go to the West Coast and they don't have to move from Indiana. They can stay here and have a very, you know, successful, fulfilling degree.
Sure. So. The things that I've seen work is you got to get the local businesses connected to your program, right? Creating, you know, competitions and challenges and stuff with real industry mentors working with the kids. I mean, those are the great kinds of things to do, and I can offline kind of give you examples of programs. You know, this whole makerspace. In fact, I think they had it on TV today that they just, with 3D printing, they just made a whole car. So you know, when you build in everything that's happening in interactive developments and how quickly you can go and what you can create in robotics these days, I don't know what your maker spaces are like here, but those are the kinds of meeting places and developing interactions with kids, with adults, which has to be overseen, right? You can't just throw kids with adults. But good mentorship programs and all these kinds of things. I think that's the way to keep them engaged and stuff. I mean, obviously, the real value of these robotics programs and stuff is it gets the kids really excited about the possibilities, and it gives them a reason why they need calculus, right, and why they need to stay in math and sciences, because it's really hard to explain simply, you know, because you need it, you know. I mean, you know, to do what, you know, and why, right? So it's great to hear what you're doing.
Yes. In the course of this analysis or your analysis of other cities, did you look at source of these companies and the jobs and the innovation that's happening? I'm curious, as you juxtapose, how much was just homegrown, organically coming out of universities or coming out of employment institutions that were already kind of incumbent in that space, versus those that maybe were attracted through institutionalized economic development corporations.
Right.
Were they very similar and it was just a difference in organic behavior, or do you see a big difference in how economic development company attraction is done in Indiana versus other places?
Yeah, no, first, our understanding of that is more because of our understanding of these places. So it's a much harder way to do it all by data, right? But, you know, I was technology advisor in Maryland, so I know Baltimore real well. I know Pittsburgh real well because we've worked there a really long time. We've actually done quite a bit of work in Denver and Colorado. So I know a lot of these places just from our work experience. There is some, you know, the innovation-driven economy doesn't mean you don't do business attraction. But, boy, if you don't have a really healthy ecosystem of companies and innovative young companies, why would a company want to move into your region, right? So you need both. And ultimately, I think you're seeing this, you know, with Salesforce, because if I have it right, Salesforce acquired a company here and kind of built off of that. And that is, to me, what a lot of economic development in an innovation-driven economy is about, is the way you get big companies today is not because they're out there looking for a national search for a space. It's because they're looking for the next thing, and they don't always have it internally, and this is what people call open innovation. And they're looking for it, and when they find it, and if it's really rooted in your community, they don't want to move it, and they're going to be here. And so, but it doesn't mean that, it doesn't mean the same things you have to do in business attraction to get those companies, even if they're acquiring someone, you have to sell them on the community. They have to see a future. They have to see that there'll be other ideas that are coming out of your community and so forth. And so, all the things that economic developers have done need to still be done. And you gotta worry about your business fundamentals and all these kinds of issues. But if that's all you do, you're not going to be successful. And I think a lot of what happens in suburban communities is they do have a lot of the business fundamentals, but what they don't have always is the innovation drivers, because that is very common for those things to be more downtown. And in Indy, it for sure is the case. And so we got to maximize your resources here. And it's not easy because, we're not asking the universities to do it themselves, right? But they're clearly a very, very important part of the business environment in which it happens. And intermediaries are really important in that process.
We have time for one more.
Hey, I wanted to ask about with the fierce competition for innovative companies and the recruitment of talent, have you seen any real working examples of progress of any cooperation amongst a Research Triangle Park or a Route 128 in a place like a Pittsburgh or Indianapolis? Has that worked where there's been some cooperation to help elevate?
You mean within the overall metro area?
Yeah, but I was talking about within two different economic development areas that can play off each other.
Yeah, sure. So actually, Research Triangle North Carolina, that Raleigh-Durham area is a great example because, if you know RTP, it was one of these developments that happened in the suburbs, right? And it fit a certain time and place. It wasn't close enough to the universities. And it got the business fundamentals right, and actually, took a long time. I mean, it took like 20 years for it to take off. And they had to put big labs, including an NIH, one of the first NIH labs outside of Maryland into North Carolina. But then North Carolina State recognized, wow, we need a park, and they have a great successful park called Centennial. And what's actually interesting is companies that are in Research Triangle Park are also in Centennial, because it's a different value proposition for the companies. And now RTP is recognizing they got to raise their game, and so they're going through this huge master plan redevelopment and building a new town center because they're out of step with what is needed from a real estate perspective. And Centennial is doing great, and Wake Forest has a tremendous park in Winston-Salem called Piedmont Triangle that has all the right elements to it. So you can have lots of nodes. And St. Louis is another example. I mean, they're building Cortex, but at the same time, right around Monsanto, there's a whole other park, and so you can have more than one placemaking, but you got to start somewhere, right? And I don't know, you all know this community better than I do, but I couldn't find another a place that I would say is a placemaking place here today, which was just surprising to me.
Right. With that, I do want to be we do want to be respectful of your time, so we'll end the formal program. David, I know you have a remark or two, but Mitch, thank you so much for some great perspective. It's great.
Thank you.
Great to have you here to learn about great things going on here, but importantly, what the challenges are, too. So thanks very much. And David, I'll let you close it out.
Lots to think about. This is a conversation that will continue. I think we will have another session like this as we get a little closer on some of these placemaking ideas that are now so current and so necessary. Mitch, we really appreciate you and your work. We look forward to the next installment of things we're going to be doing with you around workforce and talent in the life sciences and healthcare sector. The next Frameworks meeting will be on September 16th. It will be here. It will be on the topic, again, of agricultural innovation and technology, again, of the continuing development of AgriNovus and the platform there. It'll be a terrific. There's a lot to talk about there, a lot of progress there. Please come, and again, thanks today to Miles Printing and for our sponsorship, and for all of you for coming. We'll see you soon. Thank you.